WGR.
It's hard to find an expert more dedicated than John Clayton.
Sports Radio 550.
He's the consummate pro.
It's John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
With Shope and the Bulldog. Brought to you by Northwest Bank. Make the switch to Northwest Bank and get back to living.
I'm just thinking about the song draft. John Clayton with us. John, we have a song draft coming up in a couple of weeks.
A song draft?
Yes. All songs.
How does that one work?
All songs.
It's a little unwieldy right now in my mind.
It will stay that way, I think. There are a lot of songs out there, John. I don't know if you've thought about that.
I know there's a lot of songs. I mean, thank heaven you're able to go on Pandora and pick them all up.
All kinds of songs. I mean, Happy Birthday. Songs like that included.
Uh-huh.
Christmas songs. Name it. Included. Any song. Do you have a favorite? What do you like to listen to?
Well, I'm kind of into funk. You know, funk. And then, of course, hard metal stuff. But a lot of funk.
Of
I mean, you know, Parliament Funkadelic. And I do like Whispers and, you know, some of the groups out of Dayton, Ohio and all that. Certainly the Motown sound. James Brown's my obvious favorite.
What is Dayton's? Is Dayton like an important city in that world?
Yeah, because, I mean, you got Lakeside and probably about four bands that came out of Dayton.
All right. How about that? Who knew that?
I didn't know that.
They had relatives there.
I'm not encyclopedic on funk.
You're not funk-cyclopedic. Okay.
I still remember my best musical moment.
What is it?
I went down to Nags Head, North Carolina, every summer when I was in college and that, and even after that. And I went to this one, it was in the Pinteth Bar. It was kind of a disco bar. And all of a sudden, we're listening to the music. And I'm thinking, this is the greatest music I have ever heard. I've never heard anything this good. And so at the break, I walked over to the band, and I said, man, you guys sound like the Horny Horns, you know, James Brown's Horny Horns. And Maceo Parker looked at me and says, yeah, we are the Horny Horns. JB just fired us.
Okay. Wow.
You happen to happened, if you remember correctly, what happened is that he wanted to have more funk, and so he wanted to change the beat. And so what he did, he went down to Cincinnati, and he was able to get a drummer, a new drummer, and all the different things. And so that was where they made the big change. And the Horny Horns were outside looking in.
So they would have been impressed that you made that connection, even though you didn't recognize it was them.
No, exactly.
I mean, that's pretty good, I think.
Because, I mean, you know what it was like back in the 70s,
no, I don't.
Early 80s. It's not like there was enough TV to be able to, you know, get the picture of Maceo Parker. Sure, if you had it on the album,
right.
And of course, then you're able to do it, but it's going to be more James Brown in the front, not Maceo Parker.
Right,
exactly.
You wouldn't have found out on Twitter that
yeah,
James
by the way,
Brown had
what
fired
he did,
the horns.
He went down to Cincinnati to get Bootsy Collins and his brother, and Bootsy and Bootsy's rubber band kind of pair it up, and so that's when they went to funk. And so what they did instead of 1-2, 1-2, it was like 1-2, 1-2, 1-2.
They changed it up. This would be like
me. I love how going to school we are.
I love it too.
This is great.
This would be like maybe your point about the lack of TV and visibility.
Yeah.
Like we don't have ESPN or the internet, and I'm reading an article about the NFL, and I run into you. I'm like, this reads like something you wrote, and you're like, I did write that.
That's me. Mm-hmm. I'm John Clayton.
That's my style.
Right, exactly.
I would not be that perceptive. Okay, how was Seattle-Dallas for you? Close game, tough game.
It was a good game, though. I mean, I think what we saw was that Dak Prescott grow up. I mean, that 3rd-and-14 run was just absolutely huge. In fact, his knee's still a little bit sore from flying in the air and landing on it. But, I mean, he grew up, and I think what we didn't recognize is how good the Dallas Cowboys defense has become. Now, remember, it's one of the youngest defenses that you can imagine. In fact, I think they're the first team in like 40 years to have a defense that ranked high in the top five or top seven and didn't have any player 30 years old or older. And so they're young, they're good, they're aggressive, they can get to the passer. They did a great job of doing stunning and stop the run, and so it gave Seattle problems, and Seattle couldn't come back. And so after a very good 10-win season, they're out.
It seemed like a lot of the reporting that I read after this game, just the way my Saturday shook out, I did not get to sit with a lot of this game, John. A lot of what I read was critical of Seattle for not trying to throw it more. Is that warranted?
I discount it. I mean, I know everybody seems to say that, but again, you know, I've watched 21 games from the sidelines of how this team has evolved, and they've evolved by running. And because what they look at is that, okay, you know, here with that running formula and the running offense, in the last eight games of the season, they averaged 30 points a game. They had more explosive plays, 12-yard runs and 16-yard completions, than any team in the league in the second half of the season. So they were really good there. And so, last I checked, they were up 14-10 in the fourth quarter. So say what you want. Yeah, maybe they should have thrown a few more passes, but the formula still had in a position to win. What caused them to lose was giving up a 63 and a 75-yard drive that basically sealed the deal. And you give up two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, you have a hard time winning.
John Clayton with us. John, there is a lot of news. Let's do the coaches here. And Adam Gase to the Jets. The Jets interviewed a lot of people, including Mike McCarthy, who only wanted them. What's your read on that?
Mike had limited himself because he's got family in Green Bay that didn't want to move because mm-hmm. they've got two kids that are, I think, seniors in high school, or one kid's a senior. They're real close, and so they didn't want to get him out of school. And so he was thinking about sitting out this year. So what he did, he limited himself to two interviews, one in Cleveland, one in the New York Jets. He canceled anything in Arizona and Tampa Bay. So the plan was to see if it was going to work out in the Jets. And I don't know if they offered him. They may not have. But, he was only going to coach in a perfect situation. It may not have been perfect enough for him to go, so he sits out this year. So then it came down to Matt Rhule, the Baylor coach, and, basically Adam Gase. And so Rhule didn't have any good offensive coordinators to offer. And so the fact that Adam had called plays, I mean, he ends up getting the job. And now we'll see what he can do for a defensive coordinator. I think he may get Vance Joseph, who he used to have in Miami, the former head coach of the Buffalo Bills. I mean, the Denver Broncos.
Heard Greg Williams' name mentioned there, too.
Greg is also in the mix, too, right. Yes.
What do you think, Gase warranted another chance after 3 years in Miami?
Yes. I mean, he warranted a chance just in the circumstance of what everybody's looking for, because everybody's looking for offensive head coaches that call plays. And you notice that it sounds like Eric Bieniemy is starting to warm up to maybe get the Cincinnati job. And if that's going to be the case, six of the seven hires will all be offensive coaches. But again, the problem is, does he merit it under these circumstances? Yes. Does he merit it in the big time? Probably no. But if you're looking for offensive coaches that are, there were just many, weren't many options out there. And so he gets it almost in some ways by default.
John Clayton with us. How about Arizona? To me, that's the most interesting one. A guy had a losing record in college and then gets an NFL job right out of that at USC for 5 minutes in between.
Yeah.
What's the rest of the story?
Well, I mean, the rest of the story is that, again, same thing. You're desperate for an offensive coach. You want to, and so you start to reach. And I don't know. This one, to me, has some issues and some problems because, again, it's like, how good of a head coach is he and how good of a leader is he going to be? Certainly he's going to be imaginative, and certainly he can get some good things from Josh Rosen. But I think one of the big issues that he has is the fact that, he may suffer the same thing that Steve Wilkes have of hiring a staff. If he can't get a good staff, and Steve it definitely had big holes in the staff, then they're going to have problems. I mean, you saw that Ben McAdoo is one of the first guys that he's interviewing. They weren't able to have any success getting Todd Bowles out of as a defensive coordinator, because I know Arizona wanted him, and he ended up going down to Tampa Bay. So I don't know. This one to me is a little troubled.
John Clayton on the Wester Hotline with us. His appearance is brought to you by Northwest. Make the switch to Northwest Bank and get back to living. How much stock, if any, do you put in the story making the rounds today about Kingsbury's desire to get the Oklahoma quarterback Murray and trade away Josh Rosen?
I don't buy it because I can't imagine that Steve Keim is going to draft a 5'9", 5'8 quarterback with the first pick in the draft. I mean, particularly knowing that there's a good possibility at the first pick, they can, trade down to some of the teams that may want to get the Ohio State quarterback. And so I'm troubled by that. And again, if he goes in with the edict that, because again, the rating at the very best for Kyler Murray is low first round pick. And so this isn't like draft day with Kevin Costner and you take, a guy in the lower part of the first round up high. That's because of need. The Josh Rosen they like, he's got to work with Josh Rosen. And if he doesn't like it, then he better, recollect that $150,000 he paid USC and go back to USC.
Antonio Brown. That's a good one.
Yeah.
So Art Rooney pretty well, right?
I do very much, yeah.
And he sounded, to people who were there and were writing about this, he sounded like that Brown was out of there to them, to most of them at least. Do you sense that?
Yeah, I mean, when he comes out and he says, I can't envision him being at training camp next year, I think that gives the indication that they're done with him, and rightfully so. And yeah, having just watched some of that in the past year here in Seattle, I think that as tough as it's going to be, as much as it's going to set the talent base of the franchise back, because you know they consider him, and I think many consider him the best wide receiver in football, that they have to do this because his betrayal and some of the antics that he has and the relationship he's now strained with the team needs for him to move on. And again, that's what happens sometimes. I mean, with Pete Carroll, I mean, here all of a sudden guys like Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett and guys like that, you know, just stop believing because they've heard every speech, they've heard every motivating thing that a coach is going to do because they've been there for so long. And you know that Mike Tomlin's been, what, there since 2007. And so here is, you know, a guy now turning 30 that just probably just got a little bit too tired of it or too bored with it, and, you know, he just wasn't putting out. And so his effort was shaky, in the sense that he didn't work as hard as I think he wanted. Ben Roethlisberger called him out, and so now the next thing is, you know, you've got all these problems that you've got to solve, and getting rid of him, I think, is the only option they have, even though it's going to be a $21 million cap hit.
Right. Well, that's the thing about it to me. Like, the money, John, like that's a team with an aging quarterback that, you know, the window with him to win is got to be getting smaller by the by the week, if you know, at least the year anyway. So, boy, to have that dead money seems like it would make it all the tougher to try to replace Antonio Brown.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, having just watched this, I mean, because again, you know, the Steelers are going to be usually the team that's going to stay not make those changes, and that's why I think that we're probably wise in doing that, because I think change is needed. You know, because sometimes you have the comfort level of having the talent, but again, if it's going to be betraying you, and I think it's been certainly been betraying them, you've got to move on and you've got to shake it up. And so the one thing is they have Juju Smith-Schuster, who is a Pro Bowl caliber guy. In fact, had slightly a better season than Antonio there on the team. And so, in fact, one of the things that Antonio was upset about was the fact that Juju was voted as a team MVP because Antonio wanted it. And, of course, don't you think that Ben Roethlisberger, even though he had too many interceptions, would be wanting it too? So I just think at some point you just got to move on, even though it's going to be a pain, and start to rebuild, even though you're right. Ben is heading down the backstretch of his career.
It's tough to pin this on a coach, I think. But you've had, like, drama after drama there with the Steelers. And, of course, it really came to a head with Le'Veon Bell sitting out the whole year. And now this Brown thing. Like, I don't know. Does Tomlin have to carry any of this, John?
Of course he does. I mean, he allowed it to get away, but now I think organizationally they say, okay, we can't put up with this. It's time to move on. And, you know, they've had, you know, Le'Veon Bell do some bad things. I mean, he's missed games with suspensions and things of that nature, and sometimes, you know, he hasn't, put the full effort into some practices and that. And so if you keep getting away with it, then, of course, then it's going to carry down into the team and have a bad impact. And I think what's happened is that's what he did. And so now I think that, they've put their support behind Mike Tomlin, but he has to take some of the blame because, you know, if you allow players to get away with stuff like that, then all of a sudden more players can get involved and do some negative things.
I mean, only one team moves in and trades for Antonio Brown or signs Le'Veon Bell, does things like that. I don't have any expectation at all, John, that the Bills would be that team for either player. Things are pretty stable here, which is a story in and of itself. And I think they would stay away from big ego guys. You know, there's a character piece here that I think that they would probably want to shy away from. And also that, you know, they want to be young and they want to draft guys and build something here that is really yet to be built completely.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the one thing that I think that Sean McDermott needs gets good credit for, at least in the first year, I do think he changed the culture of that team. I think he did get them to work harder, and I think that's a very encouraging thing. And so now if you're going to be giving up a first-round pick or something like that for a player that, as great as he is, and again, he is a great receiver. I mean, he would be fantastic in the offense, but again, I mean, it gets you older, and I don't think they want to do that, and I think it gives you the problems that, hey, also, his career is going to start to decline. I mean, receivers start to, those good outside guys have to move inside once you get past the age of 30, and that minimizes the value. If you're paying $17 million a year under the contract, I mean, you know, again, they can afford it, but I think what they can't afford to do is get older and then lose a good draft choice.
Can I give you my Patriots take?
Sure.
I'm not sure you'll like it or even understand it. We'll see. But like, this is not coming from a Bills place per se. It's just, I love sports for many reasons. One being that I'm always comparing yesterday and today, you know, teams, players, ranking things. You're in the Hall of Fame committee. Like, that's what the Hall of Fame committee is about, is ranking things. And that's fun for discussion. We're in the discussion business. There's nothing left to do with the Patriots. The dynasty is established. It's amazing. It doesn't change anything whether it goes any longer. So, like, if they lose now, if they lose 50-0 to the Chargers, like, well, what are you going to say? Like, well, they really were bad. No, they were just old, and it was over, and everything runs its course. We've been wondering when that happens for more than a decade here, literally. So that's why I want it done with. Like, I just feel like they've been at the restaurant too long. People are waiting to sit down, and this family will not get up. I just want it to be over with, and then I will be able to breathe again. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's known as Patriot fatigue. I mean, Patriot, I think it's fatigue. Been there all around the country, and I think that, you know it's going to end at some point. I think you can see the signs of this beginning of the end right now. I mean, some of the metric numbers on Tom Brady are not good. I mean, you know, when you start to look at those next-gen stats, and those next-gen stats are the things that are taken from chips, and they show velocity of the football, where the football goes, tight windows, all these things. Just about every number is starting to come down for Tom Brady. Not to a point where he can't continue playing, but to a point now where he's not as great as he was. And I think you can see the age starting to creep in on the offense with Julian Edelman getting older, Rob Gronkowski looking old. And again, I say that for a high school chum because he went to my high school and came from Buffalo, as you know.
Yep.
But he spent a year at my high school. And so you throw all that together, and you're right. I mean, it's like it just at some point it needs to go away. But, I mean, you can see what's going to happen. I mean, let's say as great as Indy's playing right now, that they can go into Kansas City and win because of Kansas City's defensive problems. And then you can see that the Chargers are now making their second back-to-back East Coast trip, and that's going to be problematic. And so you can see if they get home field advantage in the championship game against Indianapolis, it'd be a great rivalry type of thing, but also, too, because of Spygate and everything else, or Deflategate, but it's one where they probably go to the Super Bowl and then lose to New Orleans.
The gates do run together.
Yeah.
We know about the high school connection. You guys, actually, people don't know that John and Rob Gronkowski were in home economics together.
Pretty much, yeah. I did pretty well on that.
You did?
Yeah.
Cooking?
Yeah, no, I'm not good cooking, but at least the economics, because the money part of it.
Home economics was cooking and sewing. That's what I remember from that class. It was cooking and sewing.
Right, same here.
And then there was wood shop. Did you have that?
Oh, wood shop I had, yeah. I was pretty bad at that.
Wood shop, industrial arts.
Industrial arts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's it. What was your favorite course? The math guy?
Probably. I think the history stuff. I like the history stuff real well. And the math stuff I loved. I mean, you know, I was taking calculus in high school. That was kind of fun. I think, what did I have? Calculus 3 at one point, which was pretty good. So I had like 3 years of calculus.
Football is...
My biggest mistake, which was just kind of a 3-year waste of time, because remember back then we had to take language.
Uh-huh.
Remember that?
Yeah, sure. Yes.
Yeah, and so I took German. And the reason I took German is I used to watch a lot of the World War II movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I can't find my rubbers. So it's like I took that, and it's like, what a waste of time. Why do I need German? I mean, there's no use for German right now. I mean, I'm not going to Germany. The World War II's no longer. And so it's like I did 3 years of that.
That had to be plenty.
Wow, there was just so much in there just now.
That had to be plenty, 3 years.
So much in there.
Very good. A pleasure as always, John. We'll talk next week.
Okay, sounds good.